All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, November 17th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James.
Do you try to say your name before I'm done? I was wondering this in the football podcast. Are you trying to say your name before I'm done introducing you, or you just want to be like to jump the gun a little bit, or what?
Well, because normally if I wait until you're actually done, then there's a weird pause when I was listening back. So I think I have to be ready right as you're done. Because otherwise it doesn't sound like... Because I like for it to sound like one complete sentence. Now you get to see how the sausage is made, you lucky listeners out there. So.
As we passive-aggressively fight on the podcast about when, whether
is that
not...
a fight? You could have asked me about that this morning. I feel like you had that planned as material for the podcast.
I did. I want to insert some Discord. All right. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. DFSR.com/NBA gets you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA. You're all set to go under one subscription package, free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month after that, and you're all set to go. We got a pretty big night in the NBA here. Fridays are typically big. I want to just go back one thing to yesterday's games. We don't usually talk too much. But last night, do you think that is there like a clear power dynamic shift? The Celtics winning, the Celtics with that team beating the Warriors, it was kind of already looking like this was the case anyway. Are they just like now... I know it's only one game, but they've been playing excellent. Are they now just the clear favorites in the East? Like, are they the clear favorites to go to the NBA Finals in the East?
In the East. Well, yeah, because I thought you were going to ask if they're better than Golden State. I think no. Golden State is still dramatically better than they are. But, yeah, I mean, I would say that they are the one seed, not just obviously in terms of schedule, but in terms of overall, you know, cohesion and how well they're playing together. I would, like, if they were playing a 7-game series against the healthy Cavs, I would take them right now in my mind.
The Cavs are,
I mean, who, because there's no one else, right?
No.
Like, I think the Cavs get there. I think the Cavs will be in the finals against them. I think they give them a fight, and it's really hard to say. We just haven't seen the Cavs final form, and they're going to get their second best player back. So there's reasons to have a ton of excitement for Boston fans right now.
Yeah, Celtics are 14-2 right now, and obviously beating and coming back and winning against the Warriors above all was just really, really impressive. Kyrie just looks great, looks like a totally different player in terms of like just especially in terms of like his passing, like he just is passing, which he wasn't really required to do in Boston. I think people were always wondering about where he would get as just a firm distributor, and I think that is coming into form, and also he's just taking people off the ball. Anyway, really fun game to watch, a low scoring game in general. I think Boston did exactly what they want to do, which is keep it low scoring.
Yeah, slow it down
completely, run half court sets. Really fun game to watch. Anyway, we're gonna get into a full slate of NBA action tonight. A lot of good stuff to kind of break down here. We'll go game by game, talking about some of the injury news that we can consider. There are going to be some outstanding pieces of news, I think, that we're not going to have prior to lock, which is going to be a little bit frustrating and maybe possibly make things a little dicier than you really wanted to on a big slate, but we'll get into that. Some of these games, though, don't rate out from a DFS standpoint as much as others. Miami, this is probably one of them. Miami goes in to face Washington. Washington's a -5 favorite. We've seen just pretty steady rotations out of the Washington guys. I mean, with Markieff Morris coming back, he's not getting... They're never incentivized to play him tons of minutes as opposed to the rest of the four starters. Miami's a pretty slow team. I don't mind a couple other guys here with the prices, but I don't know what your thoughts are on Miami and Washington.
Yeah, well, when I look at Washington, it's a team I'm pretty interested in when they have good matchups, because I think you can get some consistency out of the minutes and the production there. The one exception there tends to be Gortat. Gortat's down to 4,800 on FanDuel right now, and I know he's been very, very bad recently. 13 fantasy points, 31, which was great against Sacktown, then three bad games in a row versus Atlanta, LA, and Dallas, which all should have been pretty reasonable matchups. So I don't know exactly what to make of his prospects going forward, but I do think he's going to be a hard guy. At some point, he's going to get too cheap to where you just think it's going to have to all come back together. I don't think he's, you know, a favorite to score fewer than 10 points a game, which is what he has done in four of those last five games, but it's obviously all a little bit troubling.
Yeah, 4,800 though, it's gonna bring you close to the should I play this guy or not, because I think the minutes are still gonna be pretty steady. It stands to reason they're gonna need to have him out there against Whiteside. They don't have a lot of other big bodies. Although I guess they have Jan Mahimny, they can bang with him a little bit. But I think we are buying him pretty cheap here on FanDuel, especially. You know, in FanDuel, what we've seen from this year is you really need to take. You need to take advantage of almost every price and efficiency, especially off of short-term results whenever possible. And this to me strikes me as just that kind of example. I'm not really interested in the rest of the team because I think they are priced pretty fairly on just their overall output. I don't mind Deion Waiters on the Miami side. He's been playing some big minutes. We saw a consolidation of minutes from Miami in the last game. Tyler Johnson got a lot of minutes off the bench too, but they seem like they're one outside of Justice Winslow. They do seem like they want to play their starters a healthy amount of minutes. So I don't mind Waiters' price in a couple spots under 6,000 on FanDuel. Dragic is okay. He played a ton of minutes too. It's tough to trust that on a game-to-game basis. But it does stand to reason that they're going to want to see big minutes out of here. And it's not a terrible matchup against Washington. So not a total wasteland for fantasy here. I think there's some stuff to consider. I don't know I'm going to go into the big money guys like Beal and Wall.
No, probably not. And Washington, basically a league average matchup for opposing teams. So it really comes down to the spread in that point. And, you know, this game rates to be somewhat close. So I think you can consider Miami guys. It's just that they just don't actually even, they don't have the consistency of minutes, they don't have the consistency of production. So I think on what amounts to pretty full slate, I can't imagine playing too many of these guys.
Detroit goes in to play Indiana. We talked last time about whether we could trust a guy like Andre Drummond in the 9,000 range. We were pretty skeptical about whether he was going to be able to continue paying it, though. You know, we did talk about they were able to keep him on the court a little bit more because of the free throw shooting, and then last game he played like 28 minutes, and it wasn't even totally because of foul trouble, and kind of gets buzzed off that price. He has a good matchup here. Indiana does not have much in the way of interior defense. Miles Turner is not a good interior defender, and obviously Sabonis is really not even a center, but they've kind of been playing him at times in small ball five situations. Do you like kind of going back here to Drummond? Nice, not a bad points per dollar considering the interior defense for Indiana, but still over 9,000 on FanDuel.
Yeah, the game's basically a pick 'em, so I like that for it to be close late. Detroit's been playing a lot better this year in general, and a lot of that's been thanks to Drummond. So, yeah, he did take a step back in terms of the minutes last game, still managed to put up his fifth straight game with 17 rebounds or more. The guy's a complete animal on the glass right now, and I think the rest of the stats will continue to follow too. So I think Drummond's a good play. I mean, I actually liked him against Milwaukee. I don't think that he's going to be on quite as crazy a minute situation as he has been in the past. And I think if you figure he plays 35, 36 minutes, which should be his natural rotation, he'll probably be a great value.
Detroit plays pretty slow. It's kind of tough to target guys against them, especially in half-court sets like that. Indiana has seen pretty steady minutes diets for their starters. Collison did play a lot of minutes last game, kind of out of nowhere. I'm not willing to put too much stock into that just because it just seemed like a wonky place to just play him 42 minutes. He's been more of around a 30-minute guy, and I think that's where we probably need to settle in with him. Sure. And again, this Detroit matchup is all things considered pretty slow, 24th in the league in pace. So not a ton I'm loving on the Indiana side, other than if you just think the game stays close and you maybe get you'll definitely get some of these guys underowned because there's just some other more enticing matchups, but it's hard to pick out exactly where that is. All right, this is an interesting matchup here. What are your thoughts? Utah and Brooklyn. Utah goes into Brooklyn. So two things to consider here. One, Utah is a favorite, very small favorite, but they're a favorite over Brooklyn, which makes sense. I mean, Brooklyn's still not very good. But two things with Brooklyn. One, Brooklyn has a very high total considering they're playing Utah. Their total is up near 105, and you really just haven't seen that out of game. No, 103 right now. You really don't see that often when a team plays against Utah because Utah slows the pace down so much. So that's the one thing. The other thing, too, is last game, without D'Angelo Russell, we saw finally, sort of, a Brooklyn Nets team that just played their starters a lot of minutes. Carroll played 30 minutes. Dinwiddie played mid-30s. Ronnie Hollis-Jefferson played mid-30s. And Trevor Booker saw close to 30 minutes out of the starting rotation. Are we able to trust that from Brooklyn? Because I think this is actually a situation where we can play Brooklyn guys against Utah. They're still kind of coming pretty cheap across the board. And the total isn't a total disaster. And then we can talk about the Utah thing because I think there's clearly some plays there.
See, I don't know because the total is just relative to the Nets, right? I mean, the Nets play by far the fastest pace in the league this season. And so, sure, that's a high total as compared to other teams when they played against Utah, but it's not really a high total for the Nets' purposes. They're frequently quite a bit higher than that. So for me, I'm more looking at value in this game. Like, I would never want to play Dinwiddie at 6,500 against the Jazz here. I could consider Booker. He's under 5,000. The minutes seem to be on the rise. 12 points in both of his last two starts. Just averaging roughly 23 fantasy points a game. You could live with that level of production. But again, when he played Utah just last week, he was bad. So I don't really, I hear what you're saying. It's almost weird though, because you just have to compare a team against its own baseline rather than the baseline of the defense that they're up against. So for that reason, I'm just not a buyer on Brooklyn here.
I could see getting there with definitely on Booker's price on FanDuel, a power forward, which has been just a tricky spot to figure out when, especially when you have to play two of these guys. I don't mind it. I'm with you. I get what you're saying.
But they played Utah 2 games ago.
But Booker didn't start that game. I'm just saying, like, if he's starting and going to play like these kind of minutes at the starting rotation, under 5,000 for a guy like him is just a fine thing, almost matchup independent here. Again, Utah does not have the same interior defense that they had before. When they're starting Favors and Jarebko, that's a far cry from starting Gobert on the interior. So now on the Utah side, we get some interesting plays here. We're obviously getting pace up for them. Their total, which is around 105 right now, is about as high as you'll ever see Utah coming in terms of Vegas. I feel like most of their starters are in play here, especially Mitchell. He should stay in the starting lineup. Seems like the perfect kind of matchup for him. He's the guy that's coming in a lot of lineups. Rubio, Derek Favors. I mean, Favors is a guy I can't seem to get the minutes right on him on
revenge game
game-to-game basis. So what are your thoughts here on Utah?
I love Utah. And again, we have a reasonable proxy for this since they just played on November 11th. And keep in mind, too, by the way, Gobert was out in that last Brooklyn game, too. So we actually do know how these Nets shape up against the Gobert-less Jazz. All the Jazz guys were insane in that game, right down to a man, pretty much. And all the Nets guys were bad. So I would happily play all of the Jazz guys, and I would rather not play all the Nets guys. I know it's a one-game sample, and we don't want to get carried away, but I just think that, in general, we're not super interested in playing Brooklyn, and I think you need a pretty significant reason to play guys against the Jazz on a full slate. So this is not the game where I'm going to stick my neck out for them.
6,400 for Mitchell seems fine to me. I mean,
I like Mitchell, yeah.
This is like the new world order in FanDuel. Like this, you're just going to get price corrections really quick on guys like this, sure. And he's warranted it. The usage rate on him is really damn high, and especially in the starting lineup, they're going to pretty much need this to keep him in the starting lineup, I think, just because he's one of the few guys who can create his own shots. And if you want to just transcribe the minutes over from the other game, their Favors did play 35 minutes in this game and went completely ham. So yep. 6,500 for him. It's very weird to play Favors because he just can disappear, pull disappearing acts.
A lot less likely now that Gobert's out of the picture, though. I think that they were kind of treating him with kid gloves because of all the injury stuff, and now they realize that there's just not enough tall people on the team to go stand on the court, and Jarebko's been like okay, I guess, but nothing stellar on a per-minute basis, really, in terms of fantasy purposes or real-life basketball purposes. So I think Favors is in line for a big game here.
Anyway, a lot of exposure to that game, likely, especially on the Utah side. Clippers go in to play Cleveland. Cleveland coming off the comeback win the other night against the Knicks. They are still bad. I just don't know what else. It's very tough to figure out what to do with Cleveland here. Let's start on the Clippers side, though. They are still dealing with some injury stuff. Patrick Beverley is not going to be back for this game. I don't think Gallinari is going to be back either. They've started Cenarius Thornwell and played him a lot of minutes. They've had to play the starters a lot of minutes because they really don't. When you lose two of your five starters, you're just going to be up a creek anyway, sort of. But sure. Where do you see, starting with the Clippers side, Cleveland defense has been awful this season. I think they're the worst defense in all basketball. Do we like targeting Clippers? Thinking that we're going to get extended minutes even out of guys like Blake, out of Austin Rivers, out of some of these starters. Even Thornwell, but he's very bad, but he could play a lot of minutes, and he's coming very cheap.
Yeah, I think we go through a player by player. I'm pretty uninterested in Lou Williams at 7,700. I know he's gotten there in two of the last three games. A lot of that is a little bit of run hot for him. I mean, both in scoring, rebounding, and in terms of steals, five steals last game. That's not going to be typical for a guy like him who's generally sort of disinterested on the defensive side of the ball. After that, I think Blake is a solid, maybe unspectacular, but solid bet for 5x points per dollar here. Rivers, it's a little closer. I mean, we've seen flashes from him where he's paid this price handily. We've seen flashes where he kind of disappears. I do think it's generally a very plus matchup against this Cleveland backcourt here, so he's in play for me. After that, Thornwell just seems to be one of these guys who's going to be on the court and not doing a whole lot, and I don't know that there's really anyone else you want to think about here. I mean, DeAndre, what do you think about DeAndre? He's down to 7,000, but on a general rate basis this season, he's been pretty crappy on that price.
Well, they're having trouble getting him the ball. Like, they can't, like, the reason, yeah, DeAndre was so effective,
because he can't create for himself.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. He needed the pick and roll. He needed the pick and dives that he got the basket all the time on those pick and pops with Blake, more specifically with Chris Paul. And that was, like, the big part of his value was that Paul was able to sort of probe the lane and figure out where to go.
And get him four free points a game.
And then when someone would collapse on Paul, you would just get dunks. Like, you would get Lob City dunks to those other guys, and that's just not happening anymore. And I think that's directly affected Jordan. And you're right. He can't create in his own, so they're not going to give him. They're never going to give him the ball in the post and ask him to just spot somebody up. He can't do it. And if you can't get him the ball effectively, he does lose a ton of value. Cleveland,
he could kill these guys on the board, so that's one thing that he could actually put up a big total. But that's a big tournament consideration, because if he does wind up crashing the boards, getting putbacks, you know, blocks against their generally crappy offense, maybe you see some action here, but don't play it for cash.
And Cleveland, we've talked about this last podcast. They are firmly in the we don't know what they're going to do with their minutes outside of LeBron camp. J.R. Smith actually sort of, they're incentivized to play him mostly because he's one of the few guys that actually can play defense, and he's got a pretty good range about who he can match up with. Though this is not that kind of game for him. You really like having him around when you have some like explosive wings like Giannis's and guys like that he can guard against. But that's not the case here. That being said, after LeBron, I mean, Kevin Love's minutes are all over the place. Jay Crowder's minutes are all over the place. They kind of just roll hot hands. What do we do with the Cleveland side? I think LeBron basically is almost like a lock for cash for me on FanDuel. But
yeah, LeBron's a good play. I think Smith, actually, you can make a pretty solid case for him. You look at the last five games in his game log. The shots have gone up a little bit. The fantasy points per game are excellent on this price. I mean, he's at just 4,400. If you want to compare him to a guy like Gortat in a similar price range, I know it's different positions, but a lot of times we're actually competing for price, you know, sliding guys into different prices as much as we are at different positions. So yeah, last five games, 23, 18, 31, 27, and 26 fantasy points on 4,400 is a great value. So I actually think he's definitely a guy you can think about at the shooting guard spot too.
Yeah, just a ton to like about that game, really. And that, there are a lot of good matchups tonight. Tonight's an interesting night. I feel like we're going to get concentrated value on a few of these games and be able to probably make our cash game lineups around probably, you know, four or five of the games. I really like those kind of spots because it really seems to crystallize it, and the Cleveland Clippers game strikes me as one of those. All right, another game that's interesting. The Knicks go in and play Toronto. Toronto -8 favorites here. The Knicks are basically the Porzingis show at this point. The price is up, especially on FanDuel, where he's up in the 9,000s range. He's coming off a game where he didn't quite get there against Utah, though he ran a little bit bad from the field, and you know, obviously there was pacing concerns as well. He's down to he's only 9,000 though on FanDuel for a guy that's been able to, when the minutes are there, been able to put up value on this Absolutely. Price. Do you like Porzingis in this matchup?
I think I do. I liked him, you know, as such as it is against Utah. It didn't quite get home for various reasons, but I think 9,000 is probably just a little too cheap for him. If you look at what he produced on a points per minute basis, I don't love that they're 8-point underdogs here. Like, for that reason, it'll be a little tricky for me to pull the trigger there. Like, you know, in the same position at a similar price, I think Blake probably represents a little bit safer of a play, for instance. But I think if you're looking for raw upside, I mean, the guy's got 75 point fantasy point upside. So I think for that reason, I'm definitely going to think about him for big tourneys.
Yeah, right now he's coming into 100% of our lineups on FanDuel. Blake's pretty far behind him in terms of overall projection. I'm also worried about the line here. It's hard to imagine Toronto completely blowing this team out just because of the way they're kind of made up.
I don't know, Toronto's been playing better recently, like as if on cue. We'll talk about him next. But Kyle Lowry, who we were wondering about going into that Houston game, now back-to-back games, 41 fantasy points or more. He went from $7,000 salary straight up to $8,000. Just no problem. They just, you know, just go ahead and increase his salary by 13%.
We did think that there was a chance that we saw some regression in his shooting, though not a great chance because he had had some weird splits between last year and the rest of his career. Still think he's a pretty good value. He's not as good of a value with the price climb. They are now, the one thing with Lowry though is they're going to be without DeLon Wright. DeLon Wright had been playing a lot of minutes out of the point guard position, subbing in for Lowry, and he's out now. Fred VanVleet played a lot of minutes. He's coming very cheap. The way they've been playing, so I think there's two ways this could go. I think there's a way that they could go that if you get like 24 minutes out of VanVleet, and that's actually getting somewhat interesting at the minimum salary, basically on both sides.
Sure.
Or you just get more minutes out of Lowry because they just want to run him out of the point guard spot more. Where do you think you want to settle in? I was having a little trouble settling in on their minutes last night, mostly out of the point guard spot because this is a team that they're fine playing their bench guys. Like, they want to play their bench guys.
Yeah, VanVleet, though. I mean, 22 minutes against New Orleans, but before that, 15, 16, 13, and 10. Like, you can't.
Well, they had DeLon Wright, though. Like, the what I'm saying is, like, this is he's the third point guard. Like,
sure. But I think just given that he added just 6 minutes from last game, like, I don't think it's one game is enough of a sample size to go declare that he's now just going to play 22 minutes a game going forward, especially not for cash games. I think for big tournaments, it's pretty reasonable. And, you know, we're all scrutinizing this Toronto beat writer because we're trying to figure out what OG Anunoboy, as you call him.
You call him that. I'm the one that
I just can't pronounce this guy's name for some reason. I don't know why. But OG.
Anunobi.
Anunoboy. It sounds like I'm on a new boy. I am on the new boy on the block. Fred VanVleet here, folks, coming at you. But yeah, so we were trying to figure out what's going on there. But that beat writer was saying that they actually really like FVV there, that he's, you know, they think he's going to move kind of into that Corey Joseph sort of backup point guard role eventually, but I don't know that it's going to be right away. And again, with bench guys, you know, he was sort of a hot hand situation. He may have gotten left in for 5 extra minutes for all we know. So I think maybe you get a little bit more bullish on Lowry. I think I would wait an extra game, especially for cash games on Fred.
Anunoby is interesting too because he played 30 minutes and then they were clear about it going into the game that they were going to play him less because he had never played that many minutes.
Second half to a back-to-back.
Exactly. Well. He only played 14 and we thought we would get more out of CJ Miles and really didn't because they're tough to figure
out.
They just
don't
rotations.
Like Miles that much.
No. And clearly he can't do anything else but shoot. But what do we do with Anunoby's minutes here though? Do we take him back to 30? Doesn't look like Powell's going to play again and it does seem like he's the guy they want to play. I mean, the fact that they're even this thoughtful about his minutes like this early in his career.
They really care about him.
Exactly. Like that actually strike, that's a good thing. I think we could see him tick back to like 28 minutes in this matchup. Do you think that'd be fair? And at that point, I mean, is he just a cash game consideration again? He was closer to our cash games last time until we found out about the minutes thing.
I think he's a cash game play tonight for sure. I mean, 3200 paid the price handily the last time around. It's clear to me that even though Miles was just shooting the lights out, back-to-back games now for Miles where he has been, they simply do not want to play him more than 17 to 19 minutes per game. So I think you see Anunoby.
You're going to get there.
I think you'll see that guy like 26 to 28 minutes pretty consistently here. And I think he's like relative to the new world order on FanDuel and DraftKings, he'll probably be 30% more expensive very, very soon here.
Yep. And I put him at 28 minutes and I think that's safe as long as the game stays close. Because again, I think they do want to play this guy. And so again, another interesting game, this Toronto Knicks game does have a decent amount of value. OKC goes in to play San Antonio in the 8 o'clock game. You know, this is a tough matchup here. The total here is only 198. OKC has slowed down their pace a little bit now.
Insane defense too. They're still second in the league in defensive efficiency.
This is a really tough one to target. The guys that you want to consider on the OKC side are all priced pretty fairly, and that's obviously Westbrook, George, and Melo.
Sure.
And then it looks like they're going to get Steven Adams back tonight, which would take out some of what they were doing at the center position, although that was pretty unexciting. It's really hard.
And another great defender, too.
It's really hard to play the backups on teams like this because there's just not going to be a shot for any of these guys in the lineup.
When these guys joined the starting lineup, even like when Dakari Johnson went in the starting lineup, he still wasn't doing anything. So,
well, right. How
you
can you?
Certainly don't want to play.
Like you have like three insane usage guys that are on the court. Those guys are never, ever giving you the ball to shoot. Like that's like the Hoosiers game where in the scene in Hoosiers where he tells the guy, like, you're not allowed to ever shoot. Like, you need to be the only time you can ever shoot is if you're wide open under the basket. And even then, like, maybe think twice about it. This is when you have Jimmy Chitwood on your team. So I think that's the case that you have here with OKC. And then going against, right, you said about the defense here. San Antonio, outside of Aldridge, has not had a great steadiness in minutes from their starters, and I just don't think
it's not unusual for them either. You know, they're happy to do whatever with minutes. They're certainly not falling into these old school paradigms of this guy plays 31 minutes a game no matter what. Like, yeah, so I think it's definitely a tricky game to want to run.
Charlotte goes in and plays Chicago. Charlotte's a -6 favorite, and why you sometimes can't trust when coaches say the guy's going to be on a minutes limit.
This is one of the most outrageous things ever.
Nick Batum is supposed to be on a 20-minute limit coming in his first game back and just goes out there, goes ham, and plays 32 minutes. And so usually...
Did he forget? That's what my question is. When he was sitting there in the press conference, he's like, oh yeah, Batum, 20 minutes. It's like when I think the plumber's going to come on Monday, and then he shows up at 11:30, and I'm like, oh Jesus, I completely forgot. Like, you're just sitting there, right? Like, is there no plan at all? Are they just making this up completely? It drives me insane.
It is pretty rare to see like that kind of difference in what's reported as opposed to like what happens. Usually, because like the reason you're reporting it is because you do have a plan in mind, and to overshoot it by 50% more minutes is like completely nuts. And
well,
so,
yeah, like look at the Pelicans. They were like, well, Rondo's going to come back. He's going to play 14 to 16 minutes. And then he played 14 minutes in the first half, and everyone's like, oh, you liars. And then he just didn't go back in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they had a plan to play him only 14 minutes, so they just decided to not let him walk back on the court. It's not like Batum was like a high school kid out too late, and his parents thought he would be home at 11. Like, oh, it drives me totally nuts.
So I think with Batum back, it really does kind of muddy the waters on the pricing on these guys, because they've been priced with him not being there.
Exactly. Even Walker to some degree.
Right. And they've been priced where hasn't been there, and they've been sort of missing MKG a lot too. He played a lot of minutes as well. So I think we could see these guys round out into decent amount of minutes. I just don't think we're getting any value on any of their prices right now, because it's definitely not on the guys that they're replacing.
How about MKG? I mean, 41 fantasy points on 31 minutes against Cleveland.
Yeah, that seems like a bridge too far. Like, I never totally trust that they want to play him a ton of minutes.
Yeah. It's not the minutes with him. It's actually just the production. Like, he's just not that active in the offense when they're he's just not a very skilled offensive player.
Well, they need Batum to play him more minutes, because they need another scorer, because he can't score at all. And so, sure. Now, I scored
22 points against Cleveland.
That's
I don't know if you noticed that.
That's never going to happen again for him. Again, this is also Cleveland we're talking about here. Like, he gets to play the worst defense in the world. He's just not a scorer by any means. Now, he is going to play more minutes, and he's an elite defender. And so, when you have another scorer in Batum, you can keep him out there on the court a little bit longer. It's just very tough to trust, like, what the plan is, because he's also sort of, like, matchup dependent. Like, you could easily find reasons to not have him in the game. the other side of this, Chicago is a total mess. Like, we made a big mistake. I would qualify this as a mistake. We
100%.
Chris Dunn started last game, and we really thought like this was going to be all the point guard minutes. And then it just didn't turn out to be.
We played 29 minutes, but again, minutes on a terrible team in a game where you're getting blown out just aren't worth as much. I mean, granted, we did run a little bad here. He goes 1 from 11 from the field, but the guy even played garbage time and could only get 3 points on the board.
Right.
So yeah, I'm not going to play any of this Chicago backcourt situation. Certainly in anything less, like if they were playing Phoenix or something or Brooklyn, maybe I would be a little bit more bullish, but no, right now I think you're playing fast and loose by running any of these guys.
Yeah, it's just tough to play teams, the guys on bad teams. They don't want to win.
They're a terrible team.
Oh, they're awful. Like, they are.
I watched some of that game by accident, and it was like just about the worst time of my life.
And I think we've said this before too. Like, it's one thing to be awful and at least exciting, like the Nets or like the Suns or something like that. That at least sprint up and down the court. I mean, Chicago gets into half court set. They stink and they're slow. Like, they're the Kings. Like, these are the worst kind of teams to watch. Anyway, moving on. Minnesota goes into play Dallas. Dallas playing very, very slow. Also again this year. Though a big thing with them is they've been awful on defense. Cleveland is the worst in terms of defensive efficiency. Dallas isn't all that far behind. They're at 108 in terms of that. Yeah, right. So they're 27th in terms of defense. It's a slow team, but again, they play bad on defense. What do we like about Minnesota here? They're going to get a good matchup. The total isn't bad. It's an implied total of 213 with Minnesota -7, and we know we're going to get solid rotations out of these guys. Do we like targeting them, even though we know it's pace down?
Probably not. I mean, with teams with known minutes like Minnesota, and there are some exceptions here, but generally speaking, teams with a known minute situation, you just want to take them in their best matchups, and they're often great plays, like when they play guys like Phoenix or Brooklyn or whoever. But in situations like against Dallas, they kind of move into the GPP-only play for me, because frequently the type of game script you'll see here is they'll just go in and exploit whatever is the best spot. So maybe it's Towns tonight, let's say, because Dallas bigs really aren't very inspiring on the defensive end. So Towns starts just completely killing them, and they keep feeding him the ball, and he puts up a big total. But there just aren't enough possessions to go around to where you would want to stack a bunch of Minnesota guys, for instance. But I still think there are some pretty good value guys. One of the guys that the FanDuel algorithm seems to be just ignoring is Taj Gibson. Gibson right now playing in normal game scripts, 30 to 35 minutes per game. I didn't play quite that many against San Antonio. Still wasn't a complete embarrassment on this price. And we saw two excellent games against Utah and Phoenix out of him. I wouldn't be too upset about running him out here too.
Yeah, I was going to say that about Taj. And then on the Dallas side of ball, they've been playing more minutes out of their starters, and I just still don't totally love it. I mean, Harrison Barnes is back to like what he was doing last year in terms of like, you know, 38, 39 minutes. They did play Dirk a few more minutes last game. That's very difficult
Smith
to trust.
Smith is too expensive.
Right, Smith's price has come up. Yogi Ferrell gets a lot of minutes, doesn't really do anything
with
them.
He
doesn't really do much with them. So he's a 33-minute guy. He's like sort of in that Wes Matthews category of can run out there for a long time and just have nothing happen.
He's got upside if it comes together on the shot. Like, he scored 28 fantasy points against OKC, but yeah, generally speaking, he's just out there to be the fifth guy on the court.
Portland goes into face Sacramento. Oh, sorry, I was meaning to not say that team. I did another night.
Well, why don't I do an advertisement before we get there? We'll do a sponsor while you collect yourself after that embarrassing gaffe when you mention that team's name. We'll talk about NoHalftime.com. So NoHalftime is a great place if you want to go and download a fantasy app where you can do one-on-one fantasy challenges. So you can go there on a night like tonight if you have a big feeling. Like, say you like Kristaps against Toronto. You can pick Kristaps Porzingis and issue challenges where you think he's going to outperform maybe other guys in his price range. So you issue a challenge between him and Karl-Anthony Towns or Andre Drummond or whomever, and other people in the No Halftime ecosystem can accept it or not. If they do, it's game on for any amount of money that you post straight up. If not, then no problem. The money is refunded to your account. You can also go through there and surf through all the number of challenges that people have issued on No Halftime for you to check out. So head on over to NoHalftime.com, download the app. If you use promo code DFSR on your first ever deposit, you'll get a 50% bonus up to $50.
Portland goes in and faces They Who Should Not Be Named. There we go. -7.5 favorites. Very tough with Portland here. They, outside of McCollum and Lillard, the minutes, it's a combination of two things. It's the minutes really aren't there for the starters, and not all the time, and just there's no usage for these guys. Like, these guys just do not get any shots in this offense. When you play with two guys like McCollum and Lillard that are always, one of them is always on the court,
makes it tough.
That is kind of the end of a lot of the shot opportunities, especially when they're together, and really a little bit more when Lillard's on there. Like, Lillard's just such a high usage guy. Is it just too tough to trust the minutes on either side of this matchup? Definitely on the King side.
Well, yeah, I was trying to look at some Kings to even recommend for big tournaments, and I couldn't find one.
No.
So that's really unfortunate. unfortunate.
They don't want nice things. Like, they just, like, they don't, like, they can't have them. They don't want them. They can't, they don't play any guy for more than 23 minutes.
Don't give us any good players. We don't come here. If you're a good player, please don't come here. I mean, we had to trade our good players away to other teams just so they could not kill themselves, basically. But yeah, no, the Kings spread the ball out too much. Lillard and McCollum, you know, they're kind of just efficiently priced, and you move them into a dramatic pace down matchup here. And it's kind of the same situation as Minnesota, where maybe if you guess right, you can get the guy who's going to go off on a points per dollar basis. My gut tells me that's probably McCollum, just because Lillard right now is expensive to the point where there's really just not a lot of upside in his game at a $9,500 price tag. Like, his upside tends to actually be something like 5x points per dollar here, exempting the one big game against OKC. So, yeah, unfortunately, I don't think there's a whole lot to love here.
New Orleans goes in and faces Denver in a pretty interesting fantasy spot here. They have one of the highest total. They might have the second highest total of, nope, third, sorry, 218, with Denver as -4.5 favorites. New Orleans gets Rondo back, and they're playing, you know, now with Rondo back, the plan had always been to play Rondo at the one and then Holiday at the two and create shots, and because Rondo's never going to shoot, right? So, or he should be tasked with
eight assists in 14 minutes, though.
Well, so my questions about him are, one, at what point do you think that we're going to be able to sustain his price, considering if the minutes are only going to creep up incrementally, or if there's just going to be like a Nick Batum situation where they just go out and play him? And then two, what do we think about the usage for all the other guys? Holiday took a lot of shots with him back on the court. Again, he was not on the court for a ton, but the Holiday, it does feel like Rondo, it does seem like he's going to create shots for everyone because he's never going to shoot. What do we think about evaluating this New Orleans team with him back in the fold?
Yeah, it's a nice spot because he not only doesn't shoot, but he does create shots pretty effectively for others, especially bigs on the team. The note on Rondo right now, by the way, is that he's going to play between 20 and 24 minutes tonight. So that actually probably puts him in contention for consideration. The $4,200 price tag in a very nice matchup here against Denver. I think what we saw last game is probably what we're going to get. I think Holiday right now at $6,200 represents a tremendous value, frankly. I'd be happy to play him in any format. And I think, you know, both of their bigs, you know, they're efficiently priced, but this is the type of matchup where you can roll out a guy who's efficiently priced. So I think basically everyone on the New Orleans side of the ball and the starting lineup is in play for me tonight.
Yeah, agreed. Denver is not the fastest team in the world. They don't play fantastic defense, though. Well, I guess they're middle of the road for both. I take that back. So
yeah, they're just regular.
Yeah. Denver side, though, they are going to get there are favorites, but a pretty high total here. It looks like they're going to get Gary Harris back playing again. Where do we trust any of the minutes coming in the Denver guys? Jokic seems always a little bit overpriced for me. Millsap seems always a little overpriced for me. The point guard situation is a mess between trying to figure out when it's going to be Murray's time to get a ton of minutes or when Moutier is going to come in. Is there enough to trust here on Denver?
Well, trust is probably a strong word, but I think with both Millsap and Jokic, you get significant upside really for any format. Barton's always going to be an enigma. Like, you know, you'd like to look at the track record of the minutes and you'd like to trust it. And deep down, you just know that you're going to be the guy who picks him on the week where the minutes go down to 27 or whatever. At least I know that deep down in my heart. But still, yeah, recently he's been paying this price pretty handily and has seen some cash game ownership too. So I think definitely in play there. The Moutier situation, I think, is another puzzling one because the guy's just 4,000 right now. And we know for a fact that he can just march out there and score 35, 40 fantasy points in any given day. But then he just goes out and scores two against Portland. So that situation is a stay away from me until I get more information.
Yeah, completely. Note that just came in here. Ricky Rubio is going to sit out tonight against Brooklyn. That's going to be a very interesting situation here fantasy wise because it's a lot of minutes gone from in basically the best matchup you can have. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, Nato. I'm not sure exactly who they're going to come in.
Yeah, we've gotten bit by the old Nato bug before.
Well, they have a couple of these like kind of combo guard guys that could be fine running the point with, like Mitchell, Alec Burks, maybe. There are a couple of these guys, not Rodney Hood necessarily.
I love Mitchell even more now, yeah.
But it's going to shake up their starting lineup, and that's great because it's the early game too, and I think we're just going to know what their starting lineup is here, and they're playing so shorthanded now that we're going to get a lot of minutes, I think.
In the best possible matchup. Yep. Yeah, so, I think Mitchell and Hood, my gut tells me, before we get any news, I think Mitchell and Hood are the guys to take the closest look at. Burks is definitely more of a conventional shooting guard. It's hard to imagine him taking the ball up the court, but yeah, I think taking a look at those other, you know, shooting guard, combo guard type guys is a good spot.
37 or 38 minutes out of Mitchell in a close game seems reasonable to me.
Absolutely.
Just the way that they're kind of using him.
And the game rates to be closer now with no Rubio.
So. Speaking of game that is a complete track meet waiting to happen, Phoenix takes on the Lakers. 228 total with the Lakers as -6.5 favorite. Phoenix did I mean, make the Matador defense to end all Matador defenses last night against the Rockets, where the Rockets put up 90.5 and 142 on the game, and that was actually in blowouts. Like, so they kind of took their foot off the gas. Like, if this it was like an All-Star game, basically, is what they were doing. Like, or at least
definitely reminded me of an All-Star game watching those Phoenix guys out there
on the one side of the ball. So a couple question marks I have about this game, and I'm very worried we're not going to have the information before game time. Tyson Chandler sat last night, but it was because of illness. Alex Len did not start. Greg Monroe did, and it was amazing. It was amazing in the starting lineup in only like 26 minutes. Now, he's just coming back from injury, and this is on a back-to-back. Without knowing exactly, let's say it's 7 o'clock Eastern time, and we're sitting there wondering about, because this is also the phenomenal matchup for Phoenix.
Yeah, it's giving me a headache trying to figure out what I would do in that
what
situation.
What do we do in this situation? Because Monroe is such a points-per-minute beast, and the price is so low. Like, so he's only on FanDuel right now. Sorry, I have that. Yeah, he's only 3,700 on FanDuel. And now he's like one of the best points-per-dollar guys, and I only have
it's a dream spot,
at 22
too.
Minutes. Like, yeah. This is only 22 minutes for him. What do we do? What are we going to do with this situation if we don't have news?
You don't do anything if you don't have news. I think even though it's a great spot, you could be in a situation where you just play a guy who doesn't play, and I don't think that's acceptable. I don't think we have any reason to believe he won't play as of this point, but I think we need some news, and I think we'll get some news, like something to the effect of some beat reporter has to ask a shoot around, like, are these guys playing tonight, right? Like, I mean, and if we just get no news whatsoever, then I think we stay away from it. And it's grudgingly so, but I think there's enough good plays where you can get away with it.
Yeah, it's going to suck, because it's going to suck to have not as much exposure to this game as you want, and you're basically, and it could be because of some unknowns.
Play the late slate. That's my advice. I mean, you can play the late slate and watch people make a bunch of mistakes.
Lakers, on the Lakers side of the ball, again, they're in a great matchup here. Then they sat Lonzo Ball randomly last game because it's the Lakers, and they just don't know what to totally do with this guy, and he's just young, and he can't shoot, and there's always
going to... brother arrested in China. Like, there's a lot going on there.
Well, the Lakers are always going to be, for this whole season, are going to be in problems with him because he can't shoot at all. He can just be bad for long stretches of time and not score at all. And he's so pass first that he actually is starting to pass up open shots because
he's like Rondo, basically.
Exactly. I called him Ricky Rubio with worse shooting. Like, to start, like, he's kind of like has that same burn. He's better than Rubio for sure, but and will be for his career. But right now, the shooting is a real problem. Outside of him, you do have some other guys. Kuzma's still been playing minutes. They played Randall some more minutes. Brooke Lopez, you can't trust at all with the run he's getting. How do you feel about rostering Lakers here in cash games?
I like Kuzma. I think Kuzma, you know, he got off to a slow start against Philly. Wasn't very highly owned. Wound up paying 5x points per dollar in what amounted to a good matchup there. He wasn't very effective against Phoenix when they played a few days ago. So, you know, I guess there's that. But he did play 33 minutes. And I think if you can count on the minutes there, which I think he actually is one of the steady minutes guys on the Lakers, then I think he represents a pretty solid cash game play.
Yeah, I think he's pretty safe. The price has come up, so that's a little bit of a problem.
But it's really not that bad, though, compared to his production. I mean,
especially on FanDuel 6,400 when you're having to roster the two power forwards.
Yeah, and what about Brandon Ingram? I mean, same guy. He was bad against Phoenix as well, but came out and just was insane against Philly last game. Do you trust him at 62?
It's close. I kind of trust the minutes because he's actually one of the few guys also that has, they've been incentivized to play a big amount of minutes. Like, even when they've been bad and trying to lose, he was still a guy that saw 39 minutes at times. Yeah.
But a terrible three-game stretch here against Washington, Milwaukee, and this Phoenix team before going off against Philly.
Well, he has to score, and the scoring has been a problem for him because he's just not that great of a shooter.
That doesn't sound like a
right, like he's...
Well, I don't know if you've seen his picture on FanDuel too, but he also just looks like something else might be going on. Like another,
does look a little...
little spaced out. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. So it's just the scoring with him. I think they want it. He's taking more shots this year, and I think they want him to become the scorer, and it's just not in his game. So that 47-point performance is a complete outlier against Philly. He's really probably more of like in the 25 range, and that's just cutting it a little close. And again, he's a guy he needs all of his minutes and still really can't get there. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Enjoy a great night. This is really shaping up to be, I think, a pretty exciting fantasy night for basketball, just considering some of the matchups that we have and some of the early news we have as well. So DFSR.com, NBA/NBA, will get you that free 3-day trial, free for 3 days, $34.95 a month after that. And you're all good to go. Buddy, enjoy your Friday night of basketball.
Peace.